Oh, hello there. I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 15th of December, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Cheers for that, Simon. Speaking for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Mina, Craig, Anne, Helen, Angela, Christine, Ed, Liz, Ian, Ruth, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, information about arthritis action, an historical look at sugar and desserts, Mina's Christmas cracker, and rounding all that off with a piece from Craig covering a plethora of facts about Wolverhampton. We start this week, however, with a message from our sight loss advisor, Mina.
Hello, my name's Mina, and I work for the Beacon Befriending Programme. Would you like to volunteer for Beacon? Due to high demand of people asking for telephone befriending, Beacon are looking for new volunteers to join the Befriending Programme. Your role would be to contact lonely, isolated people in the community, offer them a friendly listening ear, have a chat, and help reduce their isolation. If you can spare as little as 30 minutes a week to befriend someone in need, please give us a call on 01902 880 111. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Mina. Up now, we have our Guess the Sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. We kick off as always then with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Liz, Ian, and first up, it's Christine.
West Midlands Metro trams should be back running in the next week after half of the damaged fleet was repaired. All services were halted on November 13th when cracks were discovered in what was the second time this year faults have led to the fleet being pulled from the tracks. Almost half of the 21 carriages have now been fixed, with trams set to make a phased return within days. The announcement comes as West Midlands Mayor Andy Street repeated his apology to passengers for the situation. In a statement, the service said, "A programme of permanent repairs to West Midlands Metro's tram fleet is progressing well, and we are confident that we will be able to start a phased return of service within the next week." When services were suspended on November 13th, we said that it would be at least 4 weeks before enough trams were available to sustain a safe, reliable and robust service. Currently, nearly half the fleet has received permanent repairs and this work is continuing. Several new trams are also entering the final stages of testing required before they can enter passenger service. At this stage, we cannot offer an exact date for the return of services, but customers can be assured that we continue to work alongside the tram manufacturer to complete both the repairs and testing process as quickly as possible. Once again, we are sorry for the continued inconvenience to customers.
The Housing Minister has called on local authorities
to get control of their housing supply so they can avoid greenbelt development. Chris Pincher said the housing need in some parts of the country may be inaccurate due to councils basing it on out-of-date projections. It comes as opposition to housing plans in the Black Country and South Staffordshire continues to grow, with residents opposing schemes for thousands of homes on greenbelt land. He said the government had made it clear that councils needed to be ambitious and build enough homes in the right places to cater for local populations. The problem is when local authorities don't accurately plan, plans for housing become out of date, he said. Mr. Pincher said councils that failed to get control of their housing supplies were likely to be at the mercy of developers of rejected schemes, lodging successful appeals to the planning inspectorate. In order for local councils to protect their communities and provide for them, the housing numbers they agree they need, the local plan needs to be appropriate and in place, he added. Mr. Pincher also called for a consistent approach to identifying brownfield sites across the country to ensure that as many of them as possible are in local plans. As a government, we are putting money where our mouth is and making sure that brownfield comes first, he said. But more can be done, and we have got to work with local authorities to make sure they are maximising brownfield sites through identification in the first place and then allocation, by getting those sites put forward for development.
Leaders in Dudley have said they are very hopeful Dudley will become a city after its submission was sent off to government chiefs. Council leader Patrick Harley said he had been confident throughout, but was even more sure having read this full 60-page document. The submission was made before the December the 8th deadline and details the borough's proud historic past and 50 photographs of the area. Dudley will be vying with the likes of Reading, Guildford and Milton Keynes for city designation, which will be announced next year. Councillor Harley said, "I have been confident throughout the process that we had what it takes to succeed with this, but having read through the document, I am now even more sure. It presents a compelling case for us to become the City of Dudley. We can't do any more now. We will just have to wait and see, but I am very hopeful." Dudley Council confirmed on Black Country Day in July that it intended to pursue a bid for city status as part of a competition to mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations next year. Councillor Anne Millward, the Mayor of Dudley, said, "The bid submission is a fabulous document which really showcases what the borough is all about, from a proud past to the exciting future we are forging. It's been backed by the West Midlands Mayor, by our local MPs, by the Bishop of Dudley, local businesses, and by hundreds and hundreds of residents who got behind us by sending in photos of their favourite places. The will is certainly there to succeed with this, and I will have everything crossed that our bid to become the City of Dudley is successful."
Drug gangs across the West Midlands have been allowed to flourish because of government cuts to officer numbers, a police official has said. The region's Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Foster, said the reckless decision had contributed to a rise in gang-related violence. The West Midlands has lost more than 2,200 officers since 2010, although a government recruitment drive is underway to bolster the thin blue line. It comes after Prime Minister Boris Johnson pledged to break up 2,000 county lines drug gangs in a £300 million drive to tackle illegal narcotics. Labour PCC Simon Foster said a decade of reckless government cuts to policing has meant that West Midlands Police has lost over 2,200 officers since 2010. Those cuts have allowed drug gangs in our region to flourish and have contributed to the rise in gang-related violence. That is why I am committed to rebuilding community policing by putting 450 extra police officers out on the streets where they are needed to help prevent, disrupt and tackle crime. However, we cannot simply arrest our way out of the problem of drugs. I'm really concerned about the vulnerable young people who are drawn into these gangs and put in danger by cowardly drug dealers who profit from their criminal exploitation. we have people in place to help and support young people who are being forced to courier and sell drugs for violent offenders, something known as county lines. We also need to be looking at tackling the root causes of substance misuse and help those with chronic addiction to drugs to get into treatment so that we can disrupt the demand for drugs, break the cycle of crime, and enable people to rebuild their lives.
Travel agents have reacted to the latest travel restrictions following the emergence of the Omicron variant. The restrictions now mean fully vaccinated passengers returning from non-red list countries must self-isolate on arrival. Travellers also need to take a prepaid PCR test by day two of their return and continue to self-isolate until a negative test is returned. Larry Ballou, who owns Wolverhampton travel agency Ballou Sky Limited, which specialises in long-haul flights, described the changing of rules as confusing for customers. He said, "For us, it has been a massive blow. A lot of our passengers are hesitant with travelling because of the uncertainty. They are concerned they will travel to a country and it will be added to the red list and cause them an issue. We also have issues with the PCR tests and confusion over that. The feedback we are getting is that they are confused where to get the tests done and the regulations of the different points that they stop at." Mr. Ballou estimated that since the travel regulations began to be introduced at the start of the pandemic, it has caused him a 70% loss in custom. He added, "I am already getting calls from pre-booked passengers checking with us what they have to do. It's just so confusing and they are disillusioned with travelling. We're also having issues with people having to pay for hotels in connecting countries for quarantining. It's a minefield. The cost factor for a family is massive."
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen. Yep, it's that time of the week again, so I'm back with a roundup of all things Beacon. And first this week, we're starting with some very special thank yous. Always a nice thing for me to do. Firstly, we'd like to say a big thank you to Sandy and all the staff from Sandy's Auctions for their recent fundraiser in aid of Beacon. The charity auction raised an incredible £1,033 for people with sight loss. Thank you so much for your amazing support. And remember, if you'd like to host your own fundraiser in aid of Beacon, drop us a line at supportus@beaconvision.org. That's supportus@beaconvision.org. Or you could also give us a ring on 01902 880 111. Next, it is a big thank you to all those who braved the wet weather to come along to our wonderful forget-me-not tree service last week. It was lovely to welcome so many of you to the centre again, as well as those who watched us on Facebook Live. As always, our Chief Executive, Lisa, and our Health and Wellbeing Director, Jan, shared some moving words of remembrance as we officially lit our Christmas tree, which is adorned with heartfelt messages from you all. The messages were all centred in love, and that was certainly felt during our service. Don't forget, you can still dedicate a light on our virtual tree to shine bright in memory of a loved one. Head to www.visufund.com, that's V-I-S-U-F-U-N-D, visufund.com/forgetmenot21. visufund.com/forgetmenot21. Lastly, for the thank yous, it's another big one, and this time it's for all of our fantastic runners who turned out for our annual Santa Run at West Park in Wolverhampton recently. We'd like to say a special thank you to the wonderful Wolverhampton Mayor, the Parkrun volunteers and City Fibre for their amazing support, and a huge congratulations to our adult winner, Harry Creswell, our child winner, Dominic, and our perfect doggy winner, Teddy. We all had such a wonderful afternoon and it was great to see so many of you there. Next this week, we're all hoping that Christmas 2021 will be an extra special celebration. And here at Beacon, we've solved that age-old conundrum of not having enough places for people to sit if you're having people around over the festive season. Happens to us all, right? For just £5, you can get an extra chair you always end up needing. And not only will all the family have somewhere to sit, but you'll feel an extra special festive glow from knowing that by buying it, you've helped us support someone with sight loss as well. What's more, once you're done, you can donate it back to us so that we can sell it on and support even more people who need our help. To get your Christmas chair for just £5, you can pop into our Wolverhampton Clearing Centre on Lower Walsall Street, which is just outside Wolverhampton City Centre. To find out more about our stores, give us a call. It's 01902 880 111 and then you need to press option 2. That's 01902 880 111 and don't forget to press option 2. That's it for this week. I'll be back to chat to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers for that update, Helen. Up next, we have another block of local news. And starting this, we hear from Angela.
Dudley Council will charge residents to have their green waste collected under new proposals to be implemented next year. Green bin collections will be extended from their current 32-week service to cover 50 weeks of the year, according to the Council's proposal. However, people would have to pay for the improved and extended garden waste collection in the new opt-in service. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "We know how much people value this service. We've listened to complaints from people who are frustrated with the current collection cycle, so we know many will be pleased to see us extending this to all 12 months of the year. Most councils already charge to cover the costs of providing this service. A new chargeable opt-in service would give people the choice whether or not to use it. We will be doing all we can to ensure the extended and improved service offers excellent value to our residents. The proposals will go through a full scrutiny process, which will establish recommendations around charging, which we will of course consider before making a final decision on the cost to residents. Currently, green bin refuse is collected every fortnight and stops during the winter months, but the new proposal would ensure weekly collection and would only stop around Christmas."
A councillor in the Black Country is encouraging people to get their COVID-19 booster after she received her jab last week. Councillor Linda Leach, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Adult Services, was given her booster by Dr. Kiwal Kizishan at Bushbury Health Centre last week. She said, "I was more than happy to have my booster. In fact, I was so keen, I kept phoning to see if it was time for me to have it. I had to queue, but it wasn't a long wait and the staff were very professional and put me at ease. All COVID safety measures were in place and they had face coverings available for people who didn't have them. There was plenty of hand sanitizer available and social distancing too. I would urge everyone to get their COVID-19 vaccination, whether it is their first or second dose or their booster. It just takes a few minutes out of your life, but at the end of the day, it could very well save your life if you were to catch COVID. So please get your jab as soon as you are able to." Currently, those eligible for a vaccine includes adults aged over 40, health and social care workers, and people aged 16 and over with certain health conditions. However, following updated guidance from the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, boosters will be offered to every adult over 18 in the coming weeks. The time between second doses and booster doses will also be reduced from 6 months to 3 months.
Council tax could rise by almost 3% in Dudley, but residents will still have some of the lowest bills in the country, bosses say. Dudley Council is proposing to increase council tax by 1.99%, with a further 1% increase for adult social care services. It will equate to an extra 65p for the average home in the Dudley Borough, a Band B property, and will be used to fund services. Councillor Steve Clark, Cabinet Member for Finance, said this is a relatively small increase in comparison to the previous years, but we will have a massive impact on services for people who rely on these more than ever before.
Two men have been arrested over allegedly plotting to supply drug-soaked sheets of paper to inmates at prisons across the country. The men, who are aged between 41 and 33, were arrested in Wolverhampton on Wednesday after dawn raids were carried out by police at two addresses in Bilston. they are suspected of sending a series of letters to 10 prisons that contained sheets of writing paper soaked in a solution of synthetic drugs such as mamba or spice. The letters were intended for inmates, and it's believed they would tear off strips of the lined A4 paper to smoke. But they were intercepted by prison security staff, who noticed the letters, of which nearly 30 have been recovered, were discoloured and tinged around the edges. Police linked the letters, having spotted similarities of handwriting and common spelling mistakes, which led to the raids being carried out. Detective Inspector Tom Bowman from the Prisons Intelligence Unit at West Midlands Regional Organised Crime Unit said, "Tests have shown the sheets of paper had been soaked in a solution of water and synthetic cannabinoid before likely being oven dried. The sheets of paper were concealed inside envelopes claiming to contain private and confidential material, such as legal documents, in the hope they wouldn't be open to the same level of scrutiny as personal mail." Prisons Minister Victoria Atkins said, "These arrests demonstrate the importance of our £100 million investment in prison security measures. Not just letter scanners, but X-ray body scanners, drugs dogs and other detection equipment. These all help us to clamp down on the drugs that fuel violence in our jails, and I commend our excellent prison staff and police colleagues for their vigilance in this case."
Former head teachers and a past pupil officially cut the ribbon to formally open a £6 million sports hall, library and classroom development at the Wordsley School in Dudley. Pupils and staff at the local authority maintained school celebrated as former pupil and Oxford graduate Farid Sokativu, together with former head Mike Lambert and his wife Maggie, the former assistant head teacher, returned to view the new development. The couple were responsible for clearing the way for the multi-million pound project to be carried out, something that was badly needed because of house building in the area and a requirement for extra school places. The school now caters for 865 pupils aged from 11 to 16. Former pupil Varidzo from Dudley, who moved to the UK from Zimbabwe when she was 7 and went on to study at Oxford University reading archaeology and ancient history, is now a published author. The VIPs were invited to tour the new buildings and were told that groundwork on the project had started in 2019 after planning permissions were granted in the summer of 2018. The £6 million scheme has also involved the building of a two-storey facility with 10 classrooms, a spacious library area and a quiet room where pupils can study or focus on reading skills. There are also improved sports facilities, which have seen a former sports hall refurbished as a fitness suite and toning and training areas.
With another collection of questions to ponder over, up next we have Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's festive flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How old is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Question 2. Who wrote O Little Town of Bethlehem? Question 3. We Wish You a Merry Christmas is a folk song from where? Question 4. When was Deck the Halls written? Question 5. Which Christmas song sold 30,000 records in 1934? And finally, question 6. What was the original title of Jingle Bells? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck!
Thank you for those, Mina. I'll give those a ponder. Now we head into another block of local news. And starting this one, we hear from Ed.
Vandals have torn down two Progress Pride flags from above the front door of a Wolverhampton nightclub in what the owners claim is a hate crime. It is the second time in as many months that flags above the door of Gorgeous Nightclub have been removed. They were replaced by the owner, but were then torn down again and taken away on Tuesday night. Nightclub owner Sean Keezy, 51, said we simply replaced the flags on the first occasion. This happened about 2 months ago. But it has happened again, and I think it is deliberate and despicable that people have removed the pride symbol, as we are an LGBT inclusive venue. This was obviously a targeted removal, and whoever did this used a traffic cone on top of a wheelie bin to remove the flags and then took them away. We have ordered new flags to replace those that were pulled down and taken. We do have closed circuit television cameras, and footage from these has been handed over to the police. I'm hoping that the police will take action against those who are responsible. I believe this is a hate crime, and at the moment there is a big move to prosecute hate crimes. I think we need to make a stand against anything like this and other hate crimes. The nightclub can hold up to 650 people and is open on Thursday, Friday and Saturday nights.
Sedgley will be left without a bank when its branch of Barclays closes for the last time in March. The village branch of Lloyds Bank in Dudley Street closed on November the 8th. The opening hours of the Barclays branch in Bullring have reduced in recent years. It is currently only open on Mondays and Fridays from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. and Wednesdays between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Barclays says that the number of counter transactions had reduced significantly in the 2 years to March 2020, and only 121 customers used the branch exclusively. Barclays also closed its branch in Lichfield Street, Bilston, on May the 7th. The Sedgley branch's final closure date is Friday, March the 4th. Barclays does not intend to make anyone redundant as a result of the closure. Staff will be offered alternative roles in the bank. A Barclays spokesman said, "The decision to close a branch is never an easy one. However, customers are increasingly using alternatives to branches to do their banking. This is reflected at the Sedgley branch, where we have seen a 20% decrease in transactions. In addition, we can identify that 80% of our customers at the branch are also using different ways to bank. We will work with our customers and provide alternative options to ensure they can continue to manage their money and receive financial expertise when required. Customers have a wide range of options to complete their banking, including the Barclays app, telephone banking, online banking, and video banking."
Taxi operators based in South Staffordshire will have to cross the border into Wolverhampton for licensing services in the future. South Staffordshire Council is handing over taxi and private hire licensing functions to Wolverhampton Council. The delegation was agreed by the District Authority's Cabinet on Tuesday for an initial 3-year period. The Cabinet report said, "Joint working my way of delegating the taxi licensing function to City Wolverhampton Council has several benefits. Greater choice for the trade, including online application and in terms of garages and medical practitioners. Greater public safety through improved enforcement activity, tighter standards. Reduced licensing costs for the trade and costs for the council." South Staffordshire Council has seen a fall in income from taxi licensing in recent years, the report said. It said the council has been struggling to balance income and expenditure on taxi licensing for the last 5 years, and this will increasingly become more difficult with a balance shortfall of £25,000 expected by 2023. Government and the Local Government Association advice and guidance, supported by case law, encourages local authorities to ensure that all administration and enforcement costs of a licensing system are met by the beneficiaries of the system and not at the expense of the general taxpayer.
Property group Seven Capital's house building arm, Seven Homes, has been granted planning permission for 108 new homes on the site of the former Bluebird Toffee factory in Hunnington near Hales Owen. The plans will see the Grade 2 listed former administration building, along with the former welfare building, restored and converted to 22 apartments and townhouses. The remaining industrial units will be demolished to make way for a further 86 new build homes, which will be a mix of 2, 3, 4 and 5 bedroom, mainly 2-storey houses. The historic factory was originally built in the late 1920s for Harry Vincent Limited of Birmingham, manufacturers of the Bluebird Toffee, and was considered very modern and forward-thinking for its time due to its inclusion of a model village, village shop with post office, leisure facilities, and in particular its welfare provision. The site is close to the Clent Hills. Jonathan Richards, Managing Director of Seven Homes, said, "We are thrilled to have achieved planning for this hugely popular historical site, which has sat derelict for many years. Our plans aim to breathe a new lease of life into the site by restoring and maintaining its heritage whilst introducing new and attractive purpose-built homes for the existing and its future on-site community to enjoy for generations to come."
A bistro bar in a leafy suburb of Wolverhampton has applied to the City Council for a new premises licence that will allow them to stage live music events, sparking late-night noise nuisance concerns from local residents. Al Sorriso on Upper Green, Tettenhall, has asked for permission to allow live music at the venue between 7pm and 11:30pm, recorded music from 9am to midnight, and the sale of alcohol between 9am and midnight. In a report to the council, licensing manager Greg Bickerdike said he was looking to mediate with the premises owner and applicant, Luciana Palmieri, to agree terms. Written correspondence from Mr. Bickerdike to Elizabeth Gregg, the council's senior licensing officer, said, "Environmental health have concerns regarding potential noise nuisance to nearby residents if live music is to be permitted at the premises." A further report from Sam Hoskins, the council's senior environmental health officer, added, "Environmental health have concerns regarding potential noise nuisance. The premises is adjacent to residential accommodation, and it is foreseeable that the activities of live music will cause public nuisance. Licensing bosses have already received a number of representations raising concerns, including one from Conservative councillor Jonathan Crofts. He said, "We are mindful of the balance that we have to strike between the needs of our residents and those of our business community, which may sometimes conflict. We must ensure our residents can peacefully enjoy their homes and environment, whilst also encouraging responsible and positive investment and economic growth." Wolverhampton Council's Statutory Licensing Subcommittee is set to make a decision on the application on Friday, the 17th of December.
Up next, we have a recording from Ruth Smith, who works for Arthritis Action.
Self-management for arthritis. Self-management, put simply, is managing your arthritis symptoms yourself, using a variety of methods to address both the physical and mental impact. Arthritis affects people differently, so self-management means individuals can choose the strategies that best suit their needs. Founded in 1942, Arthritis Action is a UK charity giving hands-on practical help to combat the pain of arthritis through self-management and lifestyle advice. Keeping active. Staying active is essential for people with arthritis to strengthen the muscles around affected joints. Exercise can be as effective for pain as prescription painkillers, but getting started can be daunting. Beginning with something you enjoy, whether that is walking, swimming, or Tai Chi, means you are much more likely to carry on in the long term. Set realistic goals and build up slowly. Healthy eating and weight management. People with arthritis often wonder what types of foods they should eat or avoid to help reduce their symptoms. Contrary to popular belief, there are no particular diets or types of food that will make arthritis better or worse. The aim should be to eat a well-balanced diet and to keep to a healthy weight. For every extra pound over a healthy weight, an extra 5 pounds of force goes through the weight-bearing joints, especially the knees, hips, and ankles. This means joints are carrying an extra 5 stone in weight if someone is 1 stone overweight, making joint pain worse. Pacing your activities. Living with arthritis can be exhausting and fatigue can set in. It is important to rest during these periods, but not to overdo things to compensate when you have more energy. Here are a few tips. Find a gadget to save you time or effort, or ask your GP to refer you to an occupational therapist, or ask others how they manage specific tasks. Plan your week. Break tasks down into smaller chunks and rest in between. Make sure you include things that make you feel good too. Seeing friends or enjoying a hobby can give you a real boost. It's good to talk. Try joining an Arthritis Action online group to meet others in the same boat and share your unique experience of arthritis. Groups run on Zoom and are free to attend. Recent discussion topics have included pain management, distraction techniques, and helpful gadgets. For more information, please contact Ruth Smith on 0203 781 9230 or email ruth@arthritisaction.org.uk.
Thank you for that information, Ruth. Up next, we go into our final block of local news, and this one is kicked off by Christine.
It is all in the detail when it comes to ensuring a weather vane placed 150 feet high above a church will actually spin with the wind. That was the puzzle facing metal artist Luke Perry when he was asked to design a weather vane for St Peter's Church in Cradley to replace one that blew down many years ago. Luke, aged 38, who lives in Stourbridge and has his workshop at Cradley Heath, works under the name of IHS Artwork and has been commissioned to produce many giant sculptures. His previous work can be seen across the West Midlands, Northern Ireland, Yorkshire and Southampton. These include the Sikh Soldier at Wensfield, the Lady Chainmaker Memorial at Cradley Heath, the Lion of the Great War Memorial at Smethwick, and the Forward Together sculptures in Birmingham. Luke said that his latest creation, which measures 20 feet high by 8 feet wide, had taken a month to complete and is made of blacksmith's steel. However, after facing the design challenges, he admitted that he will face further problems when it comes to installing the weather vane on the church, which is about 150 feet high. It is a challenge Luke, a keen rock climber, looks forward to conquering in the spring of next year. One of the challenges in creating the weather vane was that I wanted to make the cockerel interesting. This is very sculptural and I had to do a lot of work on getting the balance and weight right to ensure it would spin. I think that it is expected to be put in place in the spring of next year.
A Wolverhampton Workers' Union of former Goodyear employees made a massive donation to an activity centre used by school children from across the region. The Transport and General Workers' Union has donated £3,900 to the Wildside Activity Centre to ensure that children with special needs and their families will be able to take trips aboard the newly refurbished and disabled access-friendly narrowboat. The Transport and General Workers Union has done numerous fundraising projects for three special needs schools in Wolverhampton and the Black Country, as well as at the Let Us Play charity. The donation is enough to secure three trips per year for the next 5 years for each of the special schools that the charity supports, and the Chairman and Trustee Cyril Barrett says that more are on the way. Cyril said, all these organisations look after over 630 children with special needs in Wolverhampton and the Black Country, and we have a proud association with them all. This is about giving the children the opportunity to experience something that they probably would never have the chance to experience in their lives. It will help them and their families and their carers. The narrowboat, the Trebalisa, was laid down in 1993 and was recently restored to its former glory after charitable donations made it possible. An average trip, one that the children will take in the coming years, will take them from the wharf at the Wildside Centre to Whittick and back. Children will get to see how the locks work on the canal, be able to steer the boat or operate the locks, as well as getting a glimpse of some local wildlife such as kingfishers and herons and water voles. To date, the Transport and General Workers Union has participated in some 120 projects for charities in the area.
A dedicated Himley Hall Sailing Club volunteer has been presented with a prestigious national award by Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal, President of the Royal Yachting Association, in recognition of his outstanding contribution to the sport. Tony Sutton, aged 61, of King's Winford, received a Lifetime Commitment Award at a glittering awards ceremony at 1 Great George Street in London. Tony said, "Shortly after I started at Himley Hall Sailing Club, I had to take ill health retirement and had time on my hands, so thought I'd put a bit of effort into supporting the club. Started doing a few jobs and found myself becoming Commodore. I enjoy volunteering and especially working with the youngsters, because if you can get them sailing, it's a way of keeping the club vibrant. It's great to see them developing their skills, and several have gone on to become dinghy instructors, which is really rewarding. The awards ceremony was a fantastic occasion, he said, and he told how Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal had been fascinated by a picture of Himley Hall Sailing Club's unusual clubhouse, which was displayed on the big screen when Tony went up on stage. He added, "Our clubhouse is the thatched former boathouse of the Earl of Dudley. He used to keep a steamboat in there, and we now have a teaching room downstairs and galley upstairs." Nominating Tony for the award, the club citation highlighted his calm demeanour and sense of humour and his generous giving of time to projects, activities and events.
Two sets of match-worn Wolves shirts with a poppy on them have raised more than £25,000 for the Royal British Legion after they were auctioned off. Shirts from the fixtures against Everton and Crystal Palace were signed and went under the hammer, raising £26,375 for the Armed Forces charity. It saw supporters of the club far and wide come together to bid for the items, including from Mexico, China, Brazil, Norway, Singapore and other countries. Old gold home shirts were available from the 2-1 victory over the Merseyside club and raised a total of £13,641, with Raul Jimenez's shirt netting £1,800. João Moutinho's shirt brought in £1,525, and He Chang Huang's fetched £1,385. Moutinho's shirt was won in Brazil, while Huang's number 26 headed to his home nation of South Korea, and Jimenez's remained in the UK. Amsterdam, Seoul and Istanbul were all amongst the top five most active cities when it came to page views on the third shirt, while winners came from 8 different countries, including Norway, China and Australia. Matt Wild, General Manager, Football Operations at Wolves, said, "The total figure raised for the Royal British Legion shows how unbelievable our supporters are. This is a hugely important initiative we are proud to support each season, and every year our fans go above and beyond to contribute. Seeing some of the locations on the winning bids, thousands of miles from Molyneux, is fantastic and goes to show the size of our fan base. And regardless of location, it's clear we all share the same desire to support a worthy cause, especially during this centenary year. The poppy is a symbol of remembrance and respect, and we are honoured to be playing our part in providing support to the Armed Forces community, and our supporters have done us proud in joining us for this initiative."
Wolverhampton has been chosen as the first English city to host the next British Art Exhibition, featuring a diverse range of works by 35 artists, including a number of Turner Prize winners. Among them is 2019 winner Helen Kamuk, who grew up in the city. The exhibition will be held at Wolverhampton Art Gallery and the University of Wolverhampton School of Art and will open in the new year, running from January 22nd to April the 10th. This year's exhibition is said to display the most diverse range of artists in its long-running history, with 40% of those displaying work being Black or Asian, 45% being women, and 11% being from European backgrounds. Marguerite Nugent, the Council's Manager of Arts and Culture, said, "This is a really exciting event that we have coming to the city after Christmas. This project goes beyond just being an exhibition in our spaces. The British Art Show is a major cultural event on the UK calendar that takes place every 5 years. It always tours to 4 cities and is led by Haywood Gallery Touring, based at the South Bank Centre in London. It has been held since the 1970s, so it has really got quite a long history. What's really exciting is that Wolverhampton is the first English host city. The exhibition opened in Aberdeen in the summer and it's touring first to Wolverhampton, then to Manchester and then finally to Plymouth. The event forms part of the Council's Relight Our City drive to boost the local daytime and nighttime economy and increase footfall from visitors.
Now it's time to hear from our ever knowledgeable Flashback Roger for another Did You Know feature.
Hello again, everyone. With Christmas season well underway, I've been thinking about Christmas songs and carols. So here are a few points of interest about the backgrounds of some of our perennial favourites. Now then, did you know that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was born out of a department store marketing assignment? Defunct Chicago-based department store Montgomery Ward wanted to pass out free colouring books to children during the holiday shopping season of 1939. Copywriter Robert L. May was tasked with the writing a poem to go in the booklets, but it wasn't until 10 years later, in 1949, that the poem was set to now familiar music. O Little Town of Bethlehem was written by Boston minister Philip Brooks, who spent the Christmas of 1866 in Bethlehem. Inspired by his pilgrimage, he wrote the poem O Little Town of Bethlehem in 1868 for the Sunday school at his parish in Boston, USA. Over here in England, O Little Town of Bethlehem is better known to the tune called Forest Green. And We Wish You a Merry Christmas is a folk carol from the West Country. It was sung by carolers and mummers, as they were called in the 18th century. Children who sang carols from door to door expecting treats in return, such as Christmas pudding, which often contained sweet ingredients like figs. And Deck the Halls is a Welsh New Year carol dating from the 16th century, its Welsh title being Nos Galan. The song gained popularity after it was published in John Thomas's Welsh Melodies of 1862. However, there were English lyrics, which were an attempt to translate the Welsh rather than write a new poem altogether. What the two texts have in common is a goodly quantity of fa-la-las. Santa Claus is Coming to Town is a well-used Christmas song written by J. Fred Coots and Haven Gillespie. The earliest known recorded version of the song was by banjoist Harry Resser and his band on October the 24th, 1934. It became an instant hit, with orders for over 500,000 copies of sheet music and more than 30,000 records sold within the first 24 hours. Jingle Bells has its root in America. Legend says that the song made its debut in 1850 in Medford, Massachusetts. Composed by James Lord Pierpoint, who was a native of the town who wanted to write something to commemorate the town's annual sleigh races around Thanksgiving. He published the song in 1857 under the title of One Horse Open Sleigh. Well, I do believe that I could hear some of you were prompted to burst into song, but if not, perhaps you will later after a sherry or two. Personally, I've stocked up with mince pies and I'm just about to go off to get myself a chocolate Yule log. I always love the sprig of holly and the little plastic robin on top. I do love those seasonal treats, don't you? Any road up, I'm off. I'll go down the market for a bargain or two, I think. So till next week then, I'll say ta-ra for now, ta-ra a bit, ta-ra.
Thank you for those facts, Roger. Now we have our seasonal feature, Mina's Christmas Cracker.
Hello, my name's Mina, and here's your Christmas cracker. A collection of jokes to get you in the festive mood. Here we go. Who delivers presents to cats? Santa Paws. What is white and minty? A polar bear. What did Mrs. Claus say to Santa Claus when she looked up in the sky? Looks like rain, dear. Why is everyone so thirsty at the North Pole? Noel, Noel. And finally, what was the bauble's secret addition? It was hooked on trees.
Thank you. Now we have our sportsman, Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. An incredible Raul Jimenez red card and a bizarre Manchester City penalty condemned Wolves to a second consecutive Premier League loss. The visitors were on course for an encouraging half-time team talk after keeping City at bay until Jimenez got himself sent off in remarkable circumstances. He was first booked for pulling back Rodri's shirt before being warned for trying to block the resulting free kick only 2 yards away. However, he then decided to block it again and immediately received a second yellow card. With the difficulty of hanging on to the 0-0 scoreline with 10 men in the second half, referee John Moss took centre stage with a harsh penalty decision, claiming João Moutinho had handled it in the box when the ball struck his armpit. The decision was not overturned by VAR, and Raheem Sterling tucked away the penalty to give City the lead. Wolves were unable to make a dent in the City defence for the remaining half an hour and spent most of their time keeping the scoreline to a minimum as they fell to a 1-0 defeat. Speaking after the game regarding the Jimenez sending off, Bruno Lage said, "He knows he cannot do that. He took one yellow card and he needs to understand, whether it's fair or not fair, that he has one already, so he cannot make that mistake. He left the team with 10 men. It was disappointing, but we need to move on. He is an experienced guy, but for sure he will learn from this mistake." Wolves next have a trip on Wednesday to the Amex Stadium to face Brighton before taking on Chelsea at home on Sunday. Callum Robinson netted for the first time since August to see a COVID-hit Albion secure a hugely impressive win over Reading. It was revealed prior to the game that the Baggies training ground had been struck with a coronavirus outbreak, with 4 players forced to miss the match. That meant Albion had to name all their available senior players in their starting lineup, with the bench consisting of 6 outfield players from the academy, as well as backup goalkeeper David Button. But despite the setbacks they faced, Albion put in a brilliant display to beat Veliko Paunovic's side. In a performance that saw them dominate from the first whistle to the last, they created numerous goal-scoring opportunities. In the end, it was Robinson who earned them the points, with a clever finish on the hour mark. But that was the very least the Baggies deserved, with Ismail's men by far the superior side. Speaking after the encounter, Ismail said, "I'm more than proud and I must congratulate the guys. You can imagine it has been a very difficult week. Every day a player came in with symptoms and tested negative, then they would test positive. There were staff members as well, and other people who work at the club. It was a very, very difficult week to manage. We created so many chances, we should have scored more goals, but one was enough to win. It was a great win for us, and it's more than 3 points. For the players to create that atmosphere, that mentality, after a difficult week, it could be massive for us." The Baggies next face a Friday night trip to Oakwell to take on Ismail's former club, Barnsley.
Cheers for that roundup, Ian. Now we have the weather, brought to us by Mina.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be settled dry, with an average temperature of around 6 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 8:17 a.m. for the sunrise and 3:55 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 17th of December, we have light cloud and light winds with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. On Saturday 18th of December, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. Moving on to Sunday 19th of December through to Tuesday 21st of December, we have light cloud and light winds with a maximum temperature of 6 degrees. And finally, on Wednesday 22nd and Thursday 23rd of December, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 5 degrees. So, that's your forecast for the week ahead. As always, enjoy the weather.
Now we have an article from the Talking News Federation, read out by Anne. This is all about the history of sugar and desserts.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK. This is Anne with an article from the Arts magazine. 10 Amazing Facts About Desserts. The season of Christmas feasting approaches. Food historian Tasha Marks reveals 10 facts about the not-so-humble pudding. 1. The word dessert comes from the French verb desservir, meaning to clear the table. When dessert first appeared as part of our eating rituals, it was to allow the tables to be cleared for the after-dinner activities. Sweetmeats and spiced wines were consumed standing up, away from the table. 2. Early mince pies had actual meat in them. When sugar first came to England in the 12th century, it was primarily as a spice and a medicine. For centuries, recipes involving sugar did not have a clear boundary between sweet and savoury. 3. Sugar was so important in the medical practices of the past that the saying, like an apothecary without sugar, meant a state of utter desolation. Sugar was used for everything from aiding digestion to preserving the body, as it was believed that as sugar could preserve fruit, it could also protect humans. We now know that's definitely not true, especially when it comes to teeth. 4. Early confectioners were treated like artists, travelling the world and inventing huge edible dioramas and sculptures in sugar. These early sugar artists must have seemed more like alchemists, spending hours grinding, moulding and transforming sugar into intricate creations that dazzled and enchanted the viewer and diners in equal measure. 5. In the 16th century, a sugar sculpture made by a famous confectioner could cost as much as an average person's yearly wage. As a result, sugar sculpture and confectionery were seen as markers of wealth and status throughout the early modern era. 6. Elizabethans used to build whole buildings called banqueting houses purely to have dessert in. One banquet in 1590 refers to as dessert raised to such a monstrous ticklish height that it nearly touched the ceiling. 7. Historically, jelly wasn't just a food, it was an artistic medium. There are multiple historical recipes for experimental and extravagant jellies, from jelly planetariums to jellyfish bowls with sugar swans on top. 8. The first printed ice cream recipe in Europe was part of a medical and cookery manuscript dated 1651 to 78 by Lady Anne Fanshawe. Her recipe, titled To Make Icy Cream, suggests the addition of ambergris, a substance produced in the digestive system of sperm whales, or orange flower water, both fashionable ingredients at the time. 9. The earliest English recipe for a sponge cake was by Gervase Markham in his 1615 The English Housewife. To get the aerated texture, the mixture had to be beaten for an hour with a bunch of twigs. The wire whisk wasn't invented until 1850. 10. In 1840, Queen Victoria's wedding cake was a single-tier fruit cake that weighed over 21 stone. It had busts of the couple on the top and was covered in pure white icing. Victoria's choice of a white cake sparked the trend for white wedding cakes, and so the term royal icing came into use.
DNF Soundings.
Thank you for those facts, Anne. Up next, we have the quiz answers, brought to us by our wonderful Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's musical flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How old is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? And the answer, he is 82, born in 1939. Question 2. Who wrote O Little Town of Bethlehem? And the answer here is Philip Brooks. Question 3. We Wish You a Merry Christmas is a folk song from where? And the answer, of course, is the West Country. Question 4. When was Deck the Halls written? And the answer here is the 16th century. Question 5. Which Christmas song sold 30,000 records in 1934? And the answer here, of course, is Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And finally, question 6. What was the original title of Jingle Bells? And the answer, One Horse, One Sleigh. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of someone walking on snow. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we once again have our very own Craig, who this week has for us facts all about Wolverhampton.
Hello, I'm Craig, and I have for you this week some facts about the city of Wolverhampton. Wolverhampton originally grew as a market town and has a large wooden trade industry. In the Industrial Revolution, it became an important place for coal mining, steel production, lock making and the making of cars and motorcycles. The motto of the city is Out of Darkness Cometh Light. The UK's first set of traffic lights were placed in Princess Square in Wolverhampton. Historically, part of a Staffordshire city is named after Lady Wolfram, who founded the town in 985. Young Queen Victoria is known to have visited Wolverhampton in the 1830s and described it as a large and dirty town, but one which received her with great friendliness and pleasure. In 1918, David Lloyd, the British Prime Minister, announced he was calling a general election at the Mount in Tetnall Wood. Lloyd George also made his own oratorio speech at Wolverhampton Grand Theatre in the same year. The United Kingdom government announced on 18th of December 2000 that Wolverhampton would be granted city status, making it one of the three Millennium Cities. On 20th of February 2021 is announced as part of the government's Levelling Up strategy, but what that is now called the Department for Levelling Up. Housing Communities will be the first government department to have headquarters based outside of London. There's my facts about Wolverhampton. Thank you for listening.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!